No, we can't. We can't say that. I don't think we can say that on a podcast, Reggie. Sorry. All right. Let's get started here. You are all set there. I'm all set here. Those levels seem to be in a nice little sweet spot. So let's not waste that. Okay. Put it in the book. Episode 228. I'll give you the three S's, and I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music, and I'll give you the magic. All right, here we go. Three S's: star, smile, and strong. All right, here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Fingers crossed, we are also on other platforms where you download your favorite podcasts. I know over the last month or so, there have been some technical problems. It hasn't been consistent, but please. Keep checking. Go there. If it's up there, please listen, subscribe, rate. At the very least, if you can, go to WGN Radio every Monday. It's all there. I even put a link on my Facebook page. So there's ways to hear this podcast if you really want to. And don't forget, the most important thing, too, is not only you listening, but you spreading the word. So tell your friends. Send them a link. Send them a message. Send them the reasons why Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic is your favorite podcast, and why the heck isn't it theirs? Your loyalty and devotion to this podcast is much appreciated. And don't forget, if you like what you hear, go to WGNRadio.com. Go to the podcast section. Go to the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, and you will find all previous 227 episodes. Over 4.5 years worth of podcasts there for your binging podcasting pleasure. If there's 227, that can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 228. Before I get right into the main topic of the podcast, there's been something that I have been observing now for several months. And I didn't really think it was worth, you know, talking about on a podcast, bringing up a topic here and elaborating on it and even having a major opinion on it, because it just seemed like, well, it is what it is. But I saw a variation on it just the other day, which really almost stopped me in my tracks. And I said, no, this is something that needs to be pointed out and addressed. Either you, the listener, will recognize what I'm talking about, or even more importantly, perhaps you are exhibiting and regularly partaking in this activity. And I do this as a, not only as a nice little rant that might be entertaining, but hopefully informative, and hopefully wake you up to the dangers of what you may be doing. So I'm here as both entertainer, informer, and informer, but also as a cautionary helper for you. If you are indeed doing this. Obviously, since the pandemic started and when the strict lockdown requirements started in mid-March, and they've continued, you know, to some extent, one of the things that I don't know if you noticed in your neighborhood, and maybe with you in particular, because people were not going about their daily routines, whether it was going to work or driving kids to events or volunteering or whatever you did on a daily basis, whatever your daily list of routines or activities were, most people in today's world have some level of activity. of moving around, of doing something, walking here, walking there, being at work, walking around, but you're active to some extent. Some people more than others. Some people work out 4 hours a day. I mean, right, that's a whole other world. But the average person, whether it's walking from the parking lot to your office or from your house to your garage or you're doing stuff in the yard, or as I said before, you're taking your kids places, you're walking around, you're active. Well, the shutdown, obviously, at least initially, and in some cases, I mean, the health club that I belong to is still closed and has been since March. So, you know, everybody is finding new ways to keep moving, to get in their 10,000 steps, to stay active when if they don't have those regular routines that provide that activity without even thinking. I mean, now suddenly we were becoming very sedentary. We're sitting in our homes for a while and sitting on the couch and eating. And everybody was talking about the, you know, March and April and May, those extra COVID pounds. And all of a sudden, you know, they snuck up on everybody, you know. And then all of a sudden when May came and then summer came and started to get warm and you started to put on lighter clothes and shorts and shirts and t-shirts, you're like, whoa, what's that in front of me? So then everybody started to get a little more active, even in their homes, finding stuff to do. You can't just hibernate. So yeah, that has been the reality. And as I said, you know, there's many of these activities that you don't even think about it. You just go about your daily routine and at least you get some activity in. So it took an effort. And clearly, if you went around, even if you looked out your window when you were still quarantined in those couple of first months, I don't know about in your neighborhood, but in my neighborhood and in neighborhoods when I was driving around to go for essentials, you'd see people, certainly many more people walking, lots of walkers in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, just people getting out and walking, not, you know, either. Whether it was cabin fever or whether it was legitimately I need to get my exercise or just want to make up for that activity that I haven't been getting, a lot of people walking. I've seen a lot more people jogging than I did, especially in the morning. Some people clearly who haven't jogged in years. some people, you know, you tell the ones that jog on a regular basis, right? You know, they've got a good form of jogging. You know, physically, they have a good jogging form. You know, they have their hands in a good level, and there's a nice pace there. And even more than that, they're dressed the way a jogger is supposed to be dressed, right? You know. For women nowadays, obviously, it's the yoga pants or the sweats and, you know, maybe some leg warmers and, you know, the sleeveless shirt, you know, the fluorescent color. I see a lot of hot pinks and a lot hot oranges. The baseball cap with the ponytail through the back. Not that I've been noticing. Not that I've been peeking out my front window all day just watching them go by. No. No, but you know the way, you know, they got the, you know, and then men as well, you know, they got the shorts, they got the longer running shorts. Now guys are wearing you see guys wearing the long black socks. Some of them are compression socks. Some of them are just long white socks. Black socks. That to me has been the greatest change you talk about. There was a time where you did not wear black socks with shorts. You know, you're not supposed to wear white clothes after Labor Day. Well, I mean, come on. If you were an athlete of any kind, you did not wear black socks with gym shoes or with shorts. Oh, my God. You know, I mean, you know, decades ago when you'd be embarrassed if your father walked out wearing that. I mean, come on. You know, now everybody, most people don't even wear socks. If they do, they wear the small anklets, so you don't even see them. So you mostly see bare leg when we're doing anything with shorts. We used to, in the 70s and 80s when I grew up, when you were an athletic, you were wearing the white tube socks, most likely with stripes on them as well, not just white. But, and they went to your, if not up to your knee, certainly to your mid calf. And now that's pretty much gone. And now you've got shorts down to the knees and blacks, you know, long socks or compression socks right up to the knee. So it's almost one thing. And I thought I'd never do it, but I've done it too. And I felt like, well, geez, do I do this? And I was like, yeah. And I've gone out over the last several months and, you know, gone to play tennis, and I've worn the black socks with my long shorts and my T-shirt. And I was like, yeah, I'm happening. I'm cool. I'm hip. Wow. Talk about a change. I don't know if that's another part of the nerddom that has taken over, but black socks and shorts, now they go. And white socks with shorts really don't. You almost hide the white socks. If you do wear them, you wear those anklets where they don't show over your gym shoes. Or over your track shoes, right? Is that what they call them now? I don't think people call them gym shoes anymore. Or sneakers. But, yeah. So anyway, you could tell the people that are regularly workout people, and then you could also start to tell the people who were not, but were out there, God bless them, saying, hey, I need to be active. I'm not doing my normal routine, so I'm going to go out and do something extra. Maybe not jog, but I'm certainly going to walk. Lots of walkers. Well, here's the thing that I have been noticing. Now, I don't know if this is just, you know, unique to my area, but I don't just stay within the 3 blocks radius. As I said, I've been driving to different places to get essentials. So I'm driving around in different communities in the city as well as in the suburbs of Chicago. So I'm getting a nice mix. But I see this mostly in the suburbs, in the suburban areas. And I can't figure it out. And I came to accept it until something that I saw the other day, which just tipped me over the edge. So please, and I'd love to, you know, once again, I know we can't have a dialogue here where we can go back and forth. So I always post a link to my podcast on my Facebook page. So please, if you can answer me this question, whether you know why, or if you do this, tell me why. I need to know. Because I can't figure this out. So after you listen to this podcast, and if you are so moved, I would please love to either get some explanation as to what you heard as to why people do this, or maybe you do this yourself. Please explain to me why, because I can't figure it out. As I've been driving through the communities, as I said, mostly suburbs, I see that people are both jogging as well as walking, and in groups, 3 across, sometimes 4 across, not stacked, not behind one another, not in a single file, but stacked either across, 4 across, or 2 and 2, 2 in the front, 2 in the back, but still walking, doing their daily walks, doing their daily socializations where they're not even paying attention many times because they're engrossed in a conversation, but they're doing these walks or these runs, but the walks are what drive me crazy, in the street. In the street. Why are you walking in the street? There's a sidewalk. It's right in the title. Sidewalk. We have built them for generations. They are regularly paved. They are there for the walker. And I don't want to hear, well, you know, this way I can social distance. Well, you can when you see someone coming, you can move to the side for that second and put your head down. And when I see these people walking in their groups in the street, they don't even have masks on. So they're not social distance. They're right next to one another. And if they even have masks on, they're still not social distancing. So don't give me that. But I don't understand what is the thought process here. And I wouldn't mind if they were always closer to the curb. But they're not even close to the curb. They're sort of straying into the middle of the street. And here I am driving with my 3,000-pound car. I could pick you off a 7-10 split. You're walking in the middle of the street. Then all of a sudden there's this awareness. And they look up. Oh, well, there's a car. And they almost give the car a look. Like, how dare you force me to move to the side? Or how dare you be driving so fast? Hey, I'm not driving that fast. But when you're walking in the middle of a street and a car coming down a side street, even at 25 miles an hour is fast to you while you're walking. And as I said before, I've got about a 3,000 weight advantage on you. So you need to be aware of me. I should not have to be aware of you. You are on my territory when you're walking in the street. I don't drive on the sidewalk. Why are you walking in the street? What is this phenomenon? I don't understand it. It's not social distancing. If you're using it as an excuse, that's BS. But I mean, I'm at point. Sometimes I'm because they're walking and going the same direction I am. They're not even aware that there's a car behind them. I've got my car now. I'm driving 10 miles an hour behind this group of four people that are walking in the middle of the street. I'm all for being out and being active, or even doing your socializing. Fine. But there is a place for that, and it's not in the middle of the street. Joggers, too. What are you doing? Why are you jogging in the street? The street are for cars. And they jog in the middle. They're not driving. They're not jogging out right next to the curb, out of the way. They're driving. They're either jogging in the middle, which is crazy, and sometimes not even against traffic, so they don't know there's a car coming and right boring, you know, bearing on them. But or they're halfway in the middle. Why? You either if you have to choose to run in the street for whatever damn reason, you better be hugging a curb. If you're not hugging a curb, you are endangering yourself, and you are an obstacle. Now you are a dangerous obstacle. You are endangering yourself and the driver, because I'm not expecting to have to maneuver around walkers and joggers in a street. That's not where my focus is at. If I'm making a right turn, I'm looking for other cars coming. I'm not looking about turning into somebody who's happened to be jogging or walking on the street where I'm making my right turn. Please, if you're doing this, explain it to me. If you are doing this, stop doing it. Get on the sidewalk. Oh. Well, here's the thing that tipped me over the edge. You say, Jim, wow, you're really upset about this. Yeah, it has been upsetting me for a while. And I haven't said much. I mean, I pointed out to my wife, here we go again. But here's the thing that has really got my blood pressure up. Yesterday, or 2 days ago, I'm driving down, not even a side street. This is a heavily congested, not a busy street, as we call it, you know, the busy streets. But it's a heavily congested arterial street in between the two busy streets, which a lot of times get a lot of traffic because people don't want to wait in traffic on the busy streets. So they look for little alternatives. This street is one of those alternatives. It has its own stoplight. It's not considered a major street, but it certainly gets a lot of traffic because it is taking some of the traffic off the main street, which is maybe, you know, a mile away on each side from another busy street. It's heavily trafficked by cars. Let's say that. Cars going straight. Cars making turns. This was right off a corner, too. So you got cars making left turns and right turns. You got cars making, you know, left turns that many, many times people, you know, have to go fast to beat, you know, the traffic coming the other way. They'll make a quick left turn or a right turn. There's a lot of activity at this intersection. There's a light there. It's a well-trafficked street. On ahead of me, on my left, not next to the curb, I can't believe this, is a woman with her, as I said before, her trendy walking outfits, her yoga pants, her sleeveless shirt, her baseball cap. She's got, you know, all, she's got the whole look going. What she also has going is her baby stroller with two babies. Two babies. One of those big ones. Not the small, I mean, even the small stroller these days are like, you know, some giant obstacle. But the two baby one, which is like a car almost. I mean, these strollers today are they you should have a license to drive those or even to push them. So she's got the two baby stroller. Now that's big, right? She is in the street walking with the two baby stroller with traffic, not against it, where you can, well, at least if I'm turning or I'm driving, I see this person. And she sees me. She knows that there's a car coming at her. But she is walking in the street, not hugging the curb on the left side. She's sort of in between the curb and the middle with this giant stroller, two kids, head down looking at her phone, walking in the street while cars are driving with two children. I was livid. She finally, I'm driving behind her because I'm maneuvering against traffic because of where she's at. I've got cars parked on my right side. I can't really go anywhere now. Until finally she must felt the presence of the car and moved over to guess where? The sidewalk. Oh, you mean the sidewalk works? You mean you could walk your stroller on the sidewalk the same way that you did in the street? There's no difference? Well, then why the hell aren't you on the sidewalk to begin with where it's safe? The street is, even a sidewalk these days can be dangerous. You know, sometimes cars lose control. They go over the curb and hit you. I know somebody that was walking on a sidewalk. A car, you know, was dodging another one, went off the street, hit the person, laid them up for months. They were in such pain for years after this car accident that sadly they committed suicide. That's how much pain they were in from an accident that happened 10 years before. They were in so much pain as time went on. And they were on the sidewalk. Look, drivers have enough obstacles to deal with without people walking or running in the streets. Without people walking their strollers in the street. There's enough going on, especially today, because people are worse drivers because they're all looking at their phones. How could you put yourself and then this woman putting two kids in danger by walking in the street with her head down as well, looking at her phone? Like she belongs walking in the street. And then, like I said, what I love is when she felt maybe some danger, she went to the sidewalk where she belongs. Please, please have a little sense. Have a little eye for safety. Have a little smarts. Be cautious. You do not own this world. Talk about selfishness. You do not belong walking. What did we learn when we were 5 years old, but from Officer Friendly or from our parents? Stay out of the street. That was the first thing you learned. Be careful. You're crossing the street. Look, both. Everything was about the street. The street, the street. The street was a dangerous place because cars were there. And I don't know where this came from. This disregard and this entitlement that they belong in the street. Please, if you do this, stop doing it. You are asking for trouble. You're creating a hazard for yourself, for drivers, for your children, for your friends who are with you. Whatever you're doing, Get on the sidewalk. That's what it's made for. The street are for cars. The sidewalk are for people. Case closed. Where did this come from? If you, there's no diff. Don't tell me the pavement's better on the street. I don't want to hear that BS. Oh, I can't run on the sidewalk. BS. Then go to a school. Then drive to a school if that's what your big thing is, and go run on a track somewhere. But do not run or walk against or with, even crazier, with traffic in the street. Whew. All right. How was that, Reggie, huh? Wow, look at Reggie looking at me. Reggie, the producer, looking at me over through the glass here. Yeah, I know. You look, I know. I'm sorry. I know. You. I'm sorry I scared you. But this drive, when I saw... You know, it's bad enough that an adult is acting like a five-year-old kid, which we're seeing every day. Any adult that watches or gets involved in TikTok is acting like a 15-year-old kid. So you're already arrested development. But that's another podcast. Can you tell I've thought about that? Anyway, you know, you'll hear about that in the words of Don Rickles. Anyway, no. So, yeah, no, this just drive me crazy. So please, please. And I need to know why you're doing this. Whatever you tell me, I will not accept as an excuse. There's no excuse for it. You're acting like a five-year-old kid. There's no reason for it. Run and walk on the sidewalk. The streets are for cars. Sidewalks are for people. And that's it. Pure and simple. That's just it. I can't wait to hear the explanation. Because I will laugh at it, and I will not accept it, but I can't wait to hear what this possible explanation can be. Except there's some weird entitlement. There's some weird arrogance. Like, well, I'm doing my thing, and you have to watch out for me. You better watch out, because I've got a 3,000-pound car that will smash you or run over you, and not on purpose. But what if you're running on my right side and some crazy driver is coming at me from the left and I have to swerve and hit that and go into that curb. And there you are where you shouldn't be. Get on the sidewalk. Whew. Okay. Let's get into more fun things. So, if you've listened to me for any period of time, and if you've listened to me from the very beginning, I looked back, episode 24, almost 4 years ago from right now. It was about right now, in fact. It was sometime in October. I think it was the first or second weekend in October. Episode 24, I was talking about the play Hamilton, which had been a huge, at that time, had just sort of come out for a year or so. Amazing phenomenon on Broadway, just took Broadway by storm. This very, enigmatic kind of show, a Broadway musical that included and was dominated by modern music, by rap and hip hop music, about a somewhat secondary U.S. history person, Alexander Hamilton. Now, many people know Hamilton mainly before the stage musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Many people know Hamilton mostly for one reason. He's on the $10 bill. He's on the sawbuck. In fact, he was actually going to be removed from the $10 bill because he was so insignificant. He wasn't a president. But he was, one of the first treasurers of the United States under George Washington. And so they put him on the $10 bill. They put him on the currency because he was one of the first treasurer, the head of the U.S. Treasury. And then as you learn, if you watch the story of Hamilton, or you learn the play, you watch the play, he was responsible for basically the current and our current U.S. banking system. But still, always for the most part regarded as a minor character in the early days of this country. We hear about, you know, obviously George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and Madison and, you know, Benjamin Franklin and John Hancock, just because he wrote his signature big. You know, and there was even a musical about the creation of the Constitution called 1776 and the Declaration of Independence, and all that in the Constitutional Congress. So, but here was this very odd show called Hamilton about Alexander Hamilton, who was going to be taken off the $10 bill if not for the success of this play during Barack Obama's presidency. They were going to put Harriet Tubman, the famous Underground Railroad activist, to help people get out of slavery and escape to the North. And she was going to be on the $10 bill in place of Alexander Hamilton until the crazy, unbelievable, international, obsessive, phenomenal success, Tony winning, I think 10 or 11 Tonys, of the stage musical Hamilton by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Well, I first talked about this because, as I've said many times, and this has nothing to do with age, I've talked about this recently. In my early 20s, that's when rap started. Run DMC, the old school rappers, the Beastie Boys are my age. So I was raised during the rap era when it was just emerging. It was not my thing. It still is not my thing. It has nothing to do with race. I just don't like the music. I don't like it. I like melodies. I like lyrics. I like songs that lift me up or that make me think or make me feel. And to me, that's not what hip-hop is. It's mostly talking about a person, about themselves, some, quarrels they have with other rappers, whatever. Rap is just not my thing. It's not an age thing. It's not a generational thing. I was there at the beginning of it. I wasn't into it then. I didn't break dance. I wasn't into that. That was not my thing. I was not into disco. I was not into dance music. I've been a rock and roll person, and that's where my musical roots go, from rock and roll, and I'm into, and I like some country, early country music, and blues and jazz. That's my road. So that's fine. I have nothing against it. Right now there's no question that hip hop and rap is and house music, which started here in Chicago, in fact, is dominant. It's all the rage. That's great. It's just not my thing. I used to say I don't like Brussels sprouts either, but I actually do like Brussels sprouts now. So anyway, the idea of a 2.5-hour stage musical about a relatively unknown U.S. patriot, that was the way it was sold to me, at least, was that was basically 2.5 hours of rap music and a lot of powdered wigs, was just not my thing. So I was not making a big deal about not wanting to see Hamilton, but I just didn't see it. And it was against everything that was being said and all the popularity and all the Tony Awards and all the Pulitzer Prizes and all the fame and all the influence and all the it factor that it was in the pop culture and still is. And, I just said it's not my thing. And I was joking. I said, I even joked back 4 years ago. I said, one of its first major tours outside of Broadway was here in Chicago. It just basically left here a few months ago at the beginning of this year. Was here for at least 3 years, if not longer. Sold out from beginning to end. Many people that I know saw it 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Couldn't get enough of it. People would wait out in lines. We're in lotteries for tickets. It was a true phenomenon. No question about it. But it was a phenomenon that I just did not partake in. It didn't seem, and I saw some picture, some YouTube things or some songs from it performed on the Tonys and on the Grammys. It just didn't appeal to me from what I saw and from what I was reading. And as I said many times too, also, when things get real popular, then I tend to shy away from them either, because I feel like, wow, if it's that popular, it can't be good. I'm a little snobbish. I don't know. But anyway, I didn't go out on a soapbox and say I'm not seeing Hamilton and make a big. I just didn't see it, but I did joke how, 4 years ago, I noticed that we used to always see people walking around, especially 4 years ago, walking around with Cub hats or with Blackhawk hats, and then I was seeing people walking around Chicago with powdered wigs and button down waistcoats, because now Hamilton had taken over Chicago. And I even, as a little creative parody, came up and devised my own answer to Hamilton, which was my stage musical called BFF, which not only stands for best friends forever, right? Isn't that what the youngsters call the young people? BFF, best friends forever. Well, to appeal to that crowd who were going to see Hamilton and were just taken by Hamilton like they were with Harry Potter several years before, clearly by infusing this musical with rap, it was one of the first shows to really embrace rap and bring it to Broadway. And that was why it was a very bold experiment. And then to juxtapose it with this 1700 character of Alexander Hamilton was very bold, very off the wall, very brave, and yet very successful. But so I looked at it and said, well, if Alexander Hamilton can have a stage musical, and he was kind of a secondary character for most of the 200 and X years of our country's history, what about someone like Benjamin Franklin? So my play, my stage musical, I said was going to be called BFF, which stood for Benjamin Freaking Franklin. Also, once again, trying to play into the youngster hip-hop generation by throwing in a freaking. You know what I mean? But I liked BFF. I thought it worked well. I even came up with a whole list of songs and song titles that would appeal, that would tell the Benjamin Franklin story and also be, hip with the young people and help tell the story and also draw on historical parts, just like Hamilton did, from Benjamin Franklin's life. Well, I'll tell you about that later, because I've now have a renewed sense that maybe I should really, what I thought of was kind of just a funny radio bit. Actually might be a legitimate idea. So I'll revisit that. If you didn't hear the first one, I'm going to revisit and I'll tell you how my BFF stage musical goes. And you tell me if it's a good idea or not. But my main thing and what brought this back was, after years of rejecting Hamilton for a variety of reasons, as I said, anti-powdered wigs, not a big fan of rap music, I was convinced by some friends to see it recently. It recently and now appears on Disney Plus, the new streaming service. It was filmed several years ago professionally during a performance on Broadway using the original cast, and it was meant to be shown at the theaters. Now, several years after it has played around the world in different cities, obviously still on Broadway before COVID, they felt that, to give it another boost, they felt comfortable with not just you having to see it, in a theater. They were now felt like the people that have wanted to see Hamilton by now, after 4 or 5 years, have probably seen it. And so they weren't, cannibalizing their box office receipts at the theater to introduce it to the movie theaters to a much more mass audience, and maybe, rekindle excitement in it now after 4 years to make people want it. Even if they've seen it now, on television, on Disney Plus, they may enjoy it so much if they didn't see it live that they'll want to see it again in person. Or if they've seen it many times or even just once in person, they see it now live again, or in their homes, they might want to go see it live again. So a very solid marketing strategy. But really, I think it was maybe aimed at people like me who maybe for whatever reason did not go see it. The long lines, the expense, whatever it was, that wasn't really my obstacle. Mine was more artistic, you know, than it was financial. Or, you know, I can't get a ticket or I don't want to wait in a line. But so one of the times in the last several months that my wife and I did extend our social footprint was to go to good friends of ours who we hadn't seen since January. And in a socially responsible, COVID responsible situation of masks and social distancing, we visited some friends. And in the course of our conversation throughout the evening, Hamilton had come up because they were big fans of Hamilton. They had seen it twice here in Chicago. Their daughter their 22-year-old daughter was a huge fan of it, was actually taking a college course in Hamilton. That's what's going on in the colleges today, folks. but as an elective, she was taking a course on Hamilton to better understand the story and to better understand the musical references. So it was an academic view of Hamilton. And obviously, Hamilton lends itself to academic perspectives because it is based on history. And, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda's play was based on him reading this biography of Alexander Hamilton, you know, written by Ron Chernow. And that was how the whole thing came about. He spent a whole summer reading a pretty thick biography. And somehow, after reading that, he came up with, this is a good idea for a musical. But, they were talking about it. His daughter was very enthusiastic about it. They were talking about how much they liked it. And I felt, and I've been feeling for a long time, because this Hamilton thing just became such a phenomenon, I was feeling very left out of the pop culture phenomenon of this. I've had other people email me. A longtime friend would always tell me how her younger daughter loved Hamilton, and she kept saying to me, you should see it, you should see it, you should see it. And I was, you know, I was being Mr. Tough Guy. No, that's not my thing. So I was getting it from all sides, and everybody who had seen it was just enthralled with it. And maybe that was what, as I said before, I'm weird in that way. When I see more people get into something, I sort of turn away from it. But for whatever reason, I was somehow worn down. And I did feel very isolated from the pop culture. I couldn't really even understand a lot of references because I wasn't really into it. So they said, you know, you really should see it. And I said, well, I can't see it now anyway. It's left Chicago. I could have seen it. And, you know, Broadway is closed, so oh well. And they said, well, you know, we have Disney Plus, and, you know, we could watch it here. And so all of a sudden, this idea gained steam. And my wife and I were kind of like, well, yeah, I wasn't just aggressively or obstinately against seeing it. It just wasn't my thing. I didn't feel like maybe spending $200 or $300 or $400 to see something that I really didn't think I was going to enjoy, something that really I didn't think that I could get through the first 5 minutes from what I had seen, you know, in clips. I'm like, I really can't sit for 2.5 hours and watch this play, especially I'm not really a fan of the rap music and the hip hop music, which from what I was reading about and the whole phenomenon is that was what the whole show used as its musical soundtrack. So I said, I'm not going to spend $400 or $500 or whatever it costs just to go to say I saw it. But now I was being offered a chance to see it with the original cast, right? That's what you want to see. You know, as close as live as you can get these days, right? So I broke down. I was worn down. I saw how my friend's daughter was so enthusiastic about it. She even said, look, I'm taking a class on this, and I've got this PowerPoint that I'm going through right now. I'll send you my PowerPoint so you can begin to really, you know, look at this from a deeper layer. I mean, you know, once again, I've not only been on the stage and act, but I've been a music and entertainment critic. So she said, hey, you know, you might really appreciate this and really understand, and really it might make this more interesting for you to either, if you do see it, or make you want to see it. So she now had me hooked, and she sent me this PowerPoint that went into the first six songs and gave a little rundown of the songs and some of the references. Some of these references I would have no idea about. I didn't know who Big Pun was, some rapper. So I wouldn't have gotten the Big Pun references if I hadn't read this PowerPoint, or this Mobb Deep. I don't know who Mobb Deep is. Some rap group. I'm so ignorant when it comes to the rap and hip-hop world. I readily admit it. I do not know it. I have not stepped even a toe into it. Just never. From 30 years ago. From 35 years ago, when I was in my early 20s, I just never got into it. So it's a whole segment, and now it's a very popular and dominating segment of the entertainment world that is just, it's not in my wheelhouse, which is strange for me because I consider myself a pop culture guru, but here's one area where I am just blind on. Well, at least I was. From my friends urging, they had seen it twice, and they were telling me how great it was, other friends as well. And then the enthusiasm of their daughter really sort of said, you know what, I should stop being this, you know, this anti-Hamilton guy and look and really just watch it, right? It's only 2.5 hours of my life. If I hate it, I hate it. All of my expectations and suspicions then would be validated, which I always like. You know, I always like when I make predictions and when I'm correct. And so I predicted that I would not enjoy this. And so that's why I didn't see it. So the next weekend, they couldn't even wait. Plus, the weather was getting a little cooler here. So we wanted to do this before it got too cold, where you couldn't do it outside. Once again, very responsibly, social distancing outside. My friend, you know, brought out his television out onto the patio outside. He had never done it before. And so I appreciate them going to all these lengths just to convert me and to make me into a Hamilton fan. Well, I'm always the first one to let you know when I predict something that comes true, right? If you've listened to me over any kind of period of time, you'll know that I make a lot of predictions and I relish when they come true. And I also make sure that everybody knows when I've made the correct prediction. Oh, that's why you love an Elton John, isn't it? Hey, at least I admit it, right? On those few occasions, and I'm proud to say that they're few. Reggie's looking at me like, who the hell is this guy? On those few occasions when I make a prediction that is not correct, even one that I have, you know, made a point of making a big deal about, I will admit when I am wrong. I may offer some caveats, but I will admit when I was wrong. Like, for instance, I was saying how I thought there should be no professional team sports this year because of COVID. And I predicted there would never be a pitch thrown, that there would never be a huddle formed or a snap taken or a shot, basketball shot or a puck shot. I just figured that even though there was all this talk in March and April that the seasons would be coming back, I just figured there was no possible, reasonable way amidst a pandemic that professional sports would come back. And they all did. And I was wrong. Now, granted, I have not watched any of them. I have not watched a full game of baseball. I have watched moments of football. I haven't really watched any hockey, and I haven't watched any basketball, and I haven't watched any soccer. So I have not been a hypocrite. I felt that that doing this and having these shortened seasons and these realignments, I felt were disrespectful to the sports, to the integrity of the game, to the history of the game. So I was wrong. I admitted I was wrong. I didn't think they even play. But at the same time, I wasn't a hypocrite. I didn't partake in them. I didn't watch them. So I'm not afraid to say when I'm wrong. Doesn't happen often. But when it does, you know, I'm man enough to say it. Well, I have to say it again. And this one I say with all humility and with all embarrassment. When it comes to Hamilton, the stage musical, you know, write this date down. This podcast, I believe, is going to be on October 6th, right? Or October 5th. Write this down. This is a big deal, folks. Elton Jim, once again, saying these three words. I was, Fonzie couldn't say it, but I can. I was Rugeuge. No, that's what, if you watch the old Happy Days. Fonzie had a problem saying wrong. I don't. I was wrong when it comes to Hamilton. I sat there with my friends and their daughter, and for 2.5 hours, I was very impressed with all aspects of the show. Now, am I going to, I don't know if I'm a Hamilton groupie, but I enjoyed the show. It kept my attention. It was not, in my view, it was not, and if you haven't seen it, I'm going to give you what a review of what you might want to hear. Maybe it will, if you have, if you didn't want to see it for the same reasons that I didn't, maybe this will urge you to see it, will convince you to see it. I didn't think it was all that rap dominated. Yes, there's a lot of rap in it. It's certainly got a 21st century attitude and perspective in its casting. The casting is diverse, and yes, the music is certainly on the more modern hip-hop side, but throughout the show's 20-some songs, it is also a very conventional musical. There are big production numbers. There are ballads. There are pop songs. There are, you know, operatic songs. It's very much a standard musical. Yes, it's very different in times, and you have to get used to the viewpoints and the casting of it and the whole attitude of it. But once you accept it from the beginning, you'll see that it is not that radical of a production. It's a Broadway show. It's a Broadway show. It's a bold and different Broadway show, but it still contains many of the old, accepted, standby, traditional Broadway components. I didn't think that that's what it was, but it does. And so I was immediately, from the beginning, I was open-minded to it. And there were some songs that I liked better than others. There were some songs I didn't like at all. There were some characterizations I didn't like. I know, I'm sure that the characterization of Thomas Jefferson was popular in the theater. You could tell. Jefferson was portrayed as a very kind of hipster, cool, almost like, you know, too cool for the school kind of guy, which is a crowd-pleasing kind of performance. But I thought it was a little over the top. There were a few things a little over top. I have to say, King George was a very fun character. Lin-Manuel Miranda did a great job as Hamilton. The character of George Washington was very interesting, the way it was portrayed here. You certainly got a way more insight than you ever did about Aaron Burr, who basically was known as the guy that shot Alexander Hamilton in a duel. I have to plead ignorance. I didn't know that he was vice president under John Adams. I didn't know that. Or under Jefferson, I'm sorry. I have to tell you, when I was watching this this play, I was learning a lot of things. I said, why didn't I learn this in high school? I had honors history in high school, and I didn't learn about all, and not even just about Alexander Hamilton, but a lot of side stories that branched off of this. There was a lot of interesting history that I don't understand why I didn't learn it. I mean, I don't know. Why wasn't this taught? So from that standpoint alone, I thought it was valuable. Some interesting history that I did not know or was not aware of, I learned in this. But I have to say, I enjoyed the music. I enjoyed the production, the lighting, all the production values. I thought the woman who played Eliza, his wife, was excellent. I'll be honest with you. I don't even think that Lin-Manuel Miranda was the best in the show. I thought George Washington's character was great. I thought his wife was great. He was very good. He carried the story. But I don't know if he was the strongest, to be honest with you. But he wrote it, and he was committed to it. And you could see how much he cared about that show. So, yes, I got over the powdered wigs. I got over the waistcoats. I got over the big, giant, bustled dresses that everybody was wearing. I got into some of the music, some of the hardcore rap songs. Once again, did not appeal to me. But there were three songs that I really thought that I liked. I liked the song "My Shot," which really sums up to me the Alexander Hamilton character. I thought it was a very well written song, very dramatically portrayed. So I liked the song "My Shot." I like the Schuyler Sisters, which is probably the song that you've seen performed mostly by the three sisters and one of the sisters who marries Alexander Hamilton. I was not aware that there was a, not only did I know anything about Alexander Hamilton, then you started to read about this quasi-love triangle between Hamilton, his wife, and her sister. I mean, this story, I could see, this story had a lot of interesting side stories to it. Aaron Burr, as I said, George Washington, this interesting love triangle that Hamilton was involved in. This other affair that Hamilton had, of which he exposed himself and wrote something called the Reynolds Pamphlet. I never heard of the Reynolds Pamphlet. Once again, Alexander Hamilton, you know, we know more about, you know, Paul Revere writing, you know, in Boston with the torches at the North Church. Meanwhile, Alexander Hamilton was at ground zero for the birth of this country in terms of its government. And yet he's got, you know, he didn't ride on a horse in the middle of the night. He got the short shrift. There's no doubt about that. So this play does a great job of exposing a story that needed and deserved to be told. It was told in a very entertaining and bold way. And I have to say that I really enjoyed it. My favorite song, though, because I'm always kind of a love song, moody, dark ballad guy. That's why I'm such a big Elton John fan. But there's a song in there toward the end called "It's Quiet Uptown," and for me, that was the favorite. So I was really into that song. I liked the way it was staged. I liked the way it was performed. I liked the lyrics. I liked the music. That one really just, for me, was the play. I felt that it really encapsulated the play more than anything. The tragedy of this. It almost was a Shakespearean tragedy, Alexander Hamilton's story. And so I have to just really say that I enjoyed it. And I came away when the show was over. I told my friends and their daughter, I got news for you. This play should not be called Hamilton. This play at the end was really more about Eliza, his wife. I thought she turned out to be a sympathetic character, a character to be looked up to and admired, and a character that, once again, was a strong woman behind a strong man, and so often those strong women were never heard of in our history. We didn't even know about Alexander Hamilton, so how the heck would we ever know about his wife, Eliza? And we gained a lot of information about her toward the end of the show, too. But at the end of the day, and it's been 4 years, so spoiler alert, she winds up with the final spotlight in the show. I came away having great admiration for his wife, maybe even more than Hamilton. I even wonder if the show shouldn't have been more focused on her. So I have to tell you, I was entertained. I was intellectually inspired and challenged and nourished. And musically, I found a couple of songs that I really liked. And so I have to say, I told my friends and I told their daughter, thank you. Because I have a tendency to make up my mind and be very, unshakable. But I was worn down. I watched Hamilton. And sure enough, I enjoyed it, and I would recommend it, and I might even, we'll see if that day ever comes again, I might even go see it live. I was inspired so much by Hamilton that I went back and looked about my old kind of funny idea, just a radio segment of my... I said, well, with all this to do about Alexander Hamilton, what about Benjamin Franklin? And so I came up with this idea that I would write a stage musical called BFF, Benjamin Freakin' Franklin. And I even came up with a variety of songs, of course, right, that would tell the story historically as well as entertainingly about Benjamin Franklin. If anybody had a story to tell, it should be Benjamin Franklin, right? Once again, not a president, but a very key person in our history. And so my idea for BFF, Benjamin Frequent Franklin. Here are some of my song titles. It starts out with a song called Philadelphia Franklin. Kind of a takeoff maybe on Philadelphia Freedom. Has the same sound, right? But that would be the opening, the big opening number. Philadelphia Franklin sort of laying the stage and sort of giving some foreshadowing to what the story is. Benjamin Franklin has been known as the first American. I thought, wow, what a great title that is. So that's a part. That would be a song that would be talking about why Franklin is considered the first American. So the first song is Philadelphia Franklin, followed by the first American. Now, we all know that Benjamin Franklin had many inventions. He was an innovator in many ways. He was a reporter and an editor and a newspaper man. So thus, a song would be called Ink in My Veins to talk about his work as a newspaper editor. My big, extravagant show number, dance number, production number would be called, a big up-tempo song would be called A Bunch of Benjis, because, of course, Benjamin Franklin's on the $100 bill, right? I see this being a bunch of Rockette-like dancers dressed up in $100 bills, doing high kicks and running around the stage, singing A Bunch of Benjis. I think that would be a great crowd pleaser, a rousing thing that would get people up on their seats and just clapping throughout the show and humming that tune. Many people may know that Benjamin Franklin wrote a book called Poor Richard's Almanac. My song, referring to that part of Benjamin's life, would be Richard Wasn't So Poor. That's a reference to his Poor Richard's Almanac. Many people know that Benjamin Franklin wrote or invented the bifocals. If you have progressive lenses, Benjamin Franklin invented those. It's also known that Benjamin Franklin had many extramarital affairs. He may not look like a big suave stud, but he was a big diplomat, and he went to France quite a bit and around the world, and, power is seductive. And I thought about a great... Every stage musical needs a big love song, right? Cats has Memory. Phantom has, Think of Me and All I Ask of You. Well, this one, in a playoff of Benjamin Franklin's innovative invention with the bifocals, would be a song sung by his wife, who is home knowing about Benjamin's extramarital affairs, in a heart-tugging song called Help Me See You Better. Can't you just see that? And then coming right off that to bring things up and stay on that bifocal kind of thing, a big up-tempo song called By Gosh Bifocals, with dancers jumping through a giant pair of bifocal glasses on the stage. Once again, you gotta have some big production numbers in those shows. Then, of course, we have to also remember Benjamin Franklin's electricity experiments. So, you remember he had a key on a kite, another song about him thinking about this and devising his experiment. That song would be called The Key to It All. Get the connection there? And then finally, like Miss Saigon with a helicopter landing on the stage, the big finale number would be called Go Fly a Kite, with a giant kite descending from the top of the theater, flying over the audience and landing on the stage, with Benjamin flying it the whole time in a dramatic rain and thunderstorm. Can't you just see that? Singing the song Go Fly a Kite amidst thunder and lightning and rain and drama, and this giant kite on the stage hovering over the audience. What a way to end the show. But then it also ends on a quiet, thoughtful, melancholy note. The final song. Once again, it has to be a ballad. You know me. For all that Benjamin Franklin, the influence he had on the early days and the birth of our country, and all the success and innovations that he put forth, that we use today, he never was president, which is ironic. He was never president. He was held in the most utmost respect, and yet he never was president. And so for me, that's one missing piece of the Benjamin Franklin story. And so to end my stage musical, not on a big, loud note, but on a quiet, melancholy, almost sad note, I would have the ghost of Benjamin Franklin in an empty Oval Office of the White House, maybe even today, visiting the empty White House, in the empty Oval Office, and singing this song as he looks at the presidential desk, and especially that presidential chair, which only 45 people have sat in the history of our country, and Benjamin Franklin singing to himself and to everyone else, lamenting the fact, and the title of this song, Never Sat in the Seat. He never sat in that seat, that presidential seat. And how did Franklin feel about that? For all his successes, all his innovations, all of the respect that he gained, he never still sat in that seat. And that would be the ghost of Benjamin Franklin, lamenting for all he did. He didn't get that one part of his life. And that's how the show would end. That is BFF. That is Benjamin Freakin' Franklin. I thought that would be kind of an interesting kind of parody, but I don't know. I think I should write it. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com, or hopefully wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, but most importantly, however you find the podcast, don't forget to tell your friends, to spread the word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And why isn't your friends? Send them a link. Send them a message. Tell them why. You listen once a week, so should they. And if you do that in any way of spreading the word, once again, your loyalty and devotion to this podcast is really the most important thing, and I thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed episode 228. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. He never sat in the seat.